nice to be with you tonight. As David said, I'm one of the, what was it? Fumbling father? Floundering founders? Something close to that, I'm sure. Which is an accurate description. Really nice to be here tonight. I would like to do something that we have never really quite done before, and that is go through in our meeting here the elements, and of course the elements of near-death experiences are kind of up for grabs. There are so many different lists and ways elements of near-death experience have been expressed, but go through the traditional ones, see if we can focus in a little bit more on what they are and what they really mean. Idea for this kind of a meeting came to me when I had a conversation a couple of months ago with a friend of mine who is kind of a wannabe believer in near-death experiences, but he isn't quite, and he came up with some really different ideas about what some of the elements meant than had ever occurred to me. And so I started to do a little searching about what different experiencers had said the elements of near-death experiences were, hence the idea of the meeting tonight. There are approximately 22 or so near-death experience elements, and no one experiencer has all of them. Usually, the first described element is that there is some kind of serious injury or some traumatic physical experience, drowning, operation, surgery gone bad, accident, something that precipitates one. Often, at the time the person begins their experiences, for the second element, they have a ringing or buzzing sound that happens in their ears. From their spirit is often felt pop up or move out of their body through the crown of their head. I've heard that description many times. From there, of course, they often will find themselves hovering over their body, looking down, seeing often resuscitation efforts or whatever the aftermath is of their accident or illness or surgery that happens. Often children at this point will have a guide appear to them who is usually a woman, and talked to a lot of kids who said her name was Elizabeth. And none of the kids knew each other, and they came up with the same name. So I found that fascinating. This woman described her as very tall, very loving, and somebody who's there to help them. As a child, that might be something very useful. Next, there is some kind of a tunnel or vortex or opening that seems to occur. And they go up through this opening and are drawn to the light, the brilliant light that's at the end of this tunnel. And usually, or often, at the end of the tunnel, they find this brilliant being of light who then floods them with a feeling of love. And then they, if they're an adult, but not if they're a child, will have a life's review. Everything in their life will come before them. And from there, they will often see deceased relatives, children, friends, or other acquaintances who have passed on before them. One of the elements is that communication is direct, instant, by thought, with no chance of misunderstanding. Some people I have interviewed, although very few, have seen animals, usually pets. I've heard of a couple of dogs and one set of horses. I have seen described in near-death experiences the elements that are similar in some ways, but in other ways quite different from what we would find here on Earth. A music that is off in the distance and permeates the atmosphere with this beautiful kind of a distant melody. Very complex and very beautiful. I've known a few individuals who have spent months or even years trying to track down the music that sounded the same, and a few claim they have. From there, others describe flowers, mountains, trees, scenery, rivers, other things from nature, as well as cities, buildings, technology, machinery. And a few people have described seeing things that were yet to be invented, but would be invented in the future. A few individuals have seen cities of light that had people in them who they describe as being very much like or almost the same as or the same quality as the being of light who first interviewed them. A few people have seen a horrible location or beings who were very evil or negative and who quite frightened them. Often people who have near-death experiences will describe something like a border or a limit. Some will say it's a wall. Others will say it's a river or a bridge beyond which they cannot go. And they know that if they go beyond that point, they can no longer return to this life. I've had a few people describe extraordinary or limitless knowledge. I interviewed one gentleman who probably dropped out of third grade. I say that because he was not well educated. Fell off a motorcycle out by Tooele and described having this flood of knowledge so that he knew everything about the universe. And I asked him if he could give me some of that information. He said, nope, it's all gone now. But it was really, he was absolutely sure that he had it in connection with his experience, which to me is fascinating and makes sense with the concept that information and communication can be instantaneous and complete. People often are given a choice to go back, often to raise children or be involved with a family member or someone else who desperately needs help. Usually a near-death experience is accompanied by a strong statement that they no longer in any way fear death. They often will say that they have a purpose in life. But they will usually also say they're not quite sure what it is. They were never told directly and specifically what that purpose is, but they know they have one, and that's why they had to come back. They will also mention that they are changed forever, that their priorities have been realigned, and that they see things very differently, which often leads to problems. I've known a number of people who've had near-death experiences who ultimately had their spouse divorce them or leave them or have a difficult time dealing with them because they were so different after their experience compared with how they were before, which is quite sad. Now, with those elements mentioned, let's talk about some of these. And I would request that you make your comments, if you choose to, as brief as possible. And that way we can have a chance for a lot of people to say what they'd like to say. What do you think the idea of a buzzing or ringing in the ears would be when a near-death experience happens? Is there anybody here who's had that occur in their near-death experience?
I think it's something to do actually with our living bodies. I had the experience when my tonsils were removed and this buzzing, high-pitched buzzing. And then each time I had a general anesthetic after that, I get the buzzing again. And it's profound.
Something profound. Any other comments, any other ideas about what it might mean?
I hear that, I sense that, and I don't know what it means. It's just a feeling. I don't know how to describe the why. But maybe it's because you are going from, maybe, trying to understand. Maybe you are going from one state, the human form, and you are passing to another form. And maybe that's why. I don't know. I sense that, but I don't know exactly the reason.
Thank you for that comment. Let me tell you what I assumed. Did we have another thought?
Is that ringing sound uncomfortable? Is it something kind of...
I have not heard anyone describe it as uncomfortable, but it's something that is forceful enough that they really notice it.
Is it something beautiful?
I have not heard it described as beautiful.
Something you sense, but it's not beautiful or ugly. It's something you're aware of its existence.
I'm thinking like the beginning of tinnitus after you went to too many rock concerts or something. It's there, and it's not so great, but you can't avoid it. You know, anyway. Here are some of the ways I've heard this element described. I heard one man surmise that this was the sound that was made when his spirit physically detached from his body. It was an assumption. I've heard another person describe it as, this is the sound that happens when you begin to move from the physical dimension and the tunnel or vortex or channel up to the heavenly realm is opened. That's the sound that is made when it opens. And maybe that means the same thing, because they would both happen at approximately the same time. But the gist of it is that the people who describe this assume that this sound happens because at the instant of death, they're moving on from the physical to the spiritual realm in some way. The next idea here, the spirit pops out from the crown of your head. Why would that happen? Why not like straight up or out of your big toe or your left elbow or I don't know why? I've heard this so many times, there has to be something involved here. Any thoughts about this? Good, I'm glad not too many people think about why the spirit pops up.
Oh, the brain is the control chamber or apparatus, so this could definitely be why.
Thank you, and that fits right in with what Dr. Melvin Morse and Dr. Raymond Moody have surmised. And frankly, on this point, I only have one observation, not a whole bunch of different ideas. They have surmised, especially Dr. Morse, that the place where your spirit actually somehow attaches to your physical body is in your brain. And that when it leaves, that's where it's going to leave.
It has something to do with the chakras, crown chakra or something like that.
Thank you. Next element, up above your body, looking down to see your body. Why would that happen? Why not all of a sudden you find yourself looking up or looking off into the distance or maybe the tunnel just opens up? Why would people find themselves looking down at their body? Yes?
The spirit is the guardian of the body, so it will watch to see where it's going to be buried if it is actually dying. And it'll stay there about 3 days at least.
Okay. I have heard some spirits stay there for a while, some short periods, some long periods. Other thoughts? Yes.
I just think that because your body is your home, is your spirit or your soul's home, that the body probably is because it's its home and it's leaving it.
Thank you. I have heard several people say that they were disoriented and didn't quite know what was going on until they saw their physical body below, and then they sort of realized, oh, darn, I am dead. What do I do now? Or something along those lines. And the thought has occurred to me, and I've heard this expressed only one or two other times, that this is a way that people get oriented, understand what's going on, and that they really are dead. They are detached now from their physical body.
Dennis Ritchie's book, Not All the Spirits Go to the Light. World is full of invisible people. So initially, once you leave your body, you're just in this plane still. And so you just happen to be in the same location.
That would be how it starts, absolutely. You mentioned a fascinating experiencer, an author, which George Ritchie, and we'll talk a little bit more about his experience during our discussion. Yes?
Comment is about seeing your body. All I remember was looking down from above and seeing my body, and I said, that's me down there. What am I doing down there when I'm up here? And my next thought was, no thought at all. It was a matter of, okay, what's next? You know, I'm just going on to the next procedure. So it wasn't a matter of recognizing I was dead. It was a matter of, okay, I'm there, but I'm really up here, you know. So that was my experience.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And I will hasten to say that the thoughts that I have are just thoughts. I have never personally had near-death experience, although I've interviewed many, many people, and any ideas that you may have be more valid than any of the thoughts that I have. Let's talk about the tunnel. Before we talk about its actual meaning, one of the most interesting descriptions of the tunnel that I have ever heard was by Don Woods. Don was a fascinating guy, one of, if not the oldest person to still be living with cystic fibrosis when he passed away. He was, I think he was about 40, wasn't he? Something real close to 40. And that's pretty unusual with cystic fibrosis. And during his life, he had had two near-death experiences, and because he had had one before, the second time he had one, he sort of stopped to check a few things out along the way when he had a second one, because he was thinking about it. And one of the things that he did was stop to sort of check out the tunnel as he was going up through it. And he described it as having, as being closer than he thought. He could actually reach out and feel that it was close to him and that it had some sort of texture to it. That's about all he could really put into understandable language. But I thought that was a very fascinating description, because most people talk about going through a tunnel. You have no idea if it's physical or just something made out of light, or what the sense of it was. But he said it was something tangible. The tunnel, thoughts. What is the tunnel?
Well, to me, it points out that there are different realms of existence in the spirit world, transferring from one to another. Transferring from one existence to another. Certainly we know that there is that lower one, these two that we know of, the otherwise an addition.
Other thoughts. What is the tunnel?
Well, I think it's a safe guide to the other side, so you don't get lost. It's a big universe out there.
They don't turn left and divert off you. Your own little GPS system to heaven. I like that. That's good. I could use one in this life. That makes sense.
What good description of the tunnel was given by a lady who had a catastrophe while delivering a baby. She had an extended visit to the next world. And she was asked this question, how she described the tunnel. And she described it as being rather firm, yet it moved. There are those that describe it as the person who is with them in the spirit world. Let's say we need to get off here. And she's like an elevator or some other device. They got off and she described it, shoosh, and they got back on the tunnel.
Interesting. You're getting towards one of the descriptions I heard from Dr. Ritchie toward the later years of his life.
In terms of the tunnel and the things that I've read, for some, the tunnel is rather long. For some, the tunnel is rather short. Some is wide. Some is very dark. Some semi-dark. And in light of another book that I've read, with so many people dying simultaneously all around the world, obviously there's more than one tunnel. But people, wherever they happen to be in the world when they die, they enter the spirit world into the same type of culture that they just left. So obviously there isn't just one tunnel, and it could be of many different forms, shapes, distances, and whatever, that are being used all the time by people wherever they may be dying.
Thank you.
To me, it seems like a portal. I agree with the gentleman down below that everybody's tunnel is different. So to me, I imagine that my tunnel would probably be like a funhouse tunnel.
There you go.
Going in a circular motion and just kind of go. But to me, it's like a portal.
You're going kind of from portal.
One direction together, safely.
Thank you.
According to my understanding, the tunnel is a transport medium.
From this life,
wherever.
From wherever.
Okay. It can go, the Lord uses it to transport from mortality to a higher level, and he even uses it to go from a planet to a planet.
Couple of thoughts about the tunnel. If, as has been described by many people, the world of spirits or the next world is right here or very, very close by, then the tunnel has to be a way to get from one place to the other, one form of existence to the other, as many people have described. And as was described up here, there could be various places where you could exit. Most people will go all the way to the light. In speaking at length with Elaine Durham, who in the past has been part of our group but no longer lives very closely, she described the tunnel as being not just a way to get from this physical world to the spiritual world of the next life, but also as a way to get from the past to the present to the future. So it's not just between one realm or another. There could be different places to get off in time. Now, whether or not that is an accurate description or not, I don't know, but that's the way it has been described to me. So the descriptions that we're hearing tonight, a portal, a way to go from one place to another, I think are all valid and have some reality to them. The tunnel also seems to be something that's ingrained in people. They generally go through the tunnel. It's instinctual. It's something that they're just drawn to, like that funhouse you're hoping to go to. The next thing that frequently happens is people see a being of light. What is the being of light? This seems so obvious, and yet I'm not quite sure it's that obvious. And let me tell you why. I've spoken to Christians, probably the most notable being Dr. George Ritchie, who was quite a devout Presbyterian, and he was absolutely sure the being of light that he saw was Jesus. It was Jesus Christ that he saw. I've talked to many others who said this was God, and later they saw Jesus. I've talked to Muslims who do not believe that you can see God, and some of them have said that it was the Prophet Muhammad who was there waiting for them to judge them and help them into the next life. More often than that, Muslims will say that it's the angel Gabriel who is there for them. So there is, at least for some, a degree of interpretation based on their religious background. I've heard others who have described this being as their higher self, like Daniel Brinkley did, and a few other descriptions. So what do you make of the being of light? What is the being of light?
George Ritchie was given an actual description. He saw this being as more loving, powerful, and impressive to him than anything he had imagined. And he heard a voice, and the voice said, "Stand up, you are in the presence of the Son of God."
Okay. For those of you who didn't hear that, Dr. George Ritchie, in his book Return from Tomorrow, was told or had this thought come into his mind, "Stand up, you are in the presence of the Son of God." And he said that was directed to him. That was not an assumption that he made. A couple of thoughts on this particular item. Perhaps different beings meet different people. That's one possibility. Another possibility is that different people interpret or assume the being is who they choose to see him as. Yes?
In the book of Revelations, John sees the being, and he thinks it is the Savior, and he was informed by and his fellow servant that he was deputized. And I've always felt that the Savior has so many people dying so often that he keeps him awfully busy. And I know that deity delegates whenever it's possible. God the Father delegates everything to Christ. And Christ did not baptize. That was given assigned to his apostles. And he said, you remember, that they would do things that he hadn't done, and they would do greater things.
Thank you. There's another thought about this, and that is that time is not relevant in the next life. And so I'm not sure that it would be any more difficult for God or Jesus or whoever the being of light is to greet everyone than it would be for God to hear every prayer, which I'm sure he does. There is a way that absolutely can happen. Another thought, yes?
Martin, correct me if I'm wrong, but in my research, I've never come across a case where this being of light has identified himself as Christ or Muhammad or someone. Is that your understanding?
Well, Dr. George Ritchie said that he was told, "Stand up, you are in the presence of God." I'm not sure if that was the being himself that said that or if that was announced to him. That's a very interesting question. I'd have to think about whether or not I've actually heard somebody say the being personally identified himself. I'm not sure that I have.
Yeah.
Thoughts? Yes.
Well, there are different levels of heaven. Karen Baldwin says there's 13. People are obviously going to different places. She meant a polymorphing androgynous being of light that she called the guardian, and saw androgynous beings, as did Daniel Brinkley. One thing I noticed is that everyone that meets Jesus goes to a heaven where people are men and women. But people that don't meet Jesus often meet androgynous beings or see androgynous beings and also beings that are different colors, and it gets weirder. But that's just what I've noticed.
And there are different assumptions. If anyone has seen the Life After Life video, the DVD, there is a lady in there who tried to commit suicide, and she talks about taking very close aims to where her heart was and pulling the trigger, and I guess she really wasn't that great of a shot, even really close with a pistol, because she lived to tell the story. But she described, there was this light, it was beautiful, and she was fantastic. And then she goes on and says, and I say she, because she had all these motherly feminine attributes, and so I just assumed it was a woman. And it's very interesting how people will seem to describe what they would like to see.
Yeah, I think their light shows how much knowledge and glory that they have gained.
I was thinking that if indeed some beings are of a different color, maybe they go to Pandora, where avatar beings are.
When I came close to a super being, he called me by name, put his hand on my shoulder and called me by name, Lucinda. And I looked up and I knew who he was, and I said, Father, Heavenly Father. And so I identified him right there and then, and the love that permeated from him was unspeakable. It was incredible. He was dressed in like a robe, and it was a light that was unbelievable. You know, it just like didn't sparkle, but it looked white enough to sparkle. It's hard to explain, but he knew me, and I knew him.
That's often the way it's described. Thank you.
I kind of was under the impression that I've heard quite a few people also mention that some of them were guardians, guardian angels, family members, loved ones to help you through. I also have heard that they appear before the portal and they appear after. I don't know.
There are a number of people, often children, who will have someone escort them. One of the more interesting descriptions I heard about guardians was a gentleman who, for a while, was a volunteer producer. He helped me do a radio show that I did at the time. And he was religious, but not of any specific denomination. And he had a near-death experience. He was shot in the Korean War and lost one of his lungs. And it was a very dramatic experience for him. When he died, he met someone who felt like his guardian angel, who had been with him from time to time during his life and took him around to show him relevant things that he needed to know when he came back. And for him, that was quite a different description than a being of light, but it was certainly a guardian along the lines of what you're describing. Thank you for that thought. Yes?
Yes, I haven't had any experience, but I have read a lot, and I'm fascinated by this thing. I have seen and read that everybody that describes the light describes a love attached with it. And to me, you know, that could mean something.
Thank you for nudging us on to the next really pertinent point, which is the attributes of this being of light who is seen. Almost inevitably, this being of light is described, first thing that is said is love, just like you mentioned. Undescribable love, love beyond anything that has ever been felt. If you know the intense love that a mother has for a child, even beyond that is the way it's often described. The other attribute that this being is generally described to have is complete knowledge about everything. I remember George Ritchie describing this being as older than time, but more modern than any man, which I thought was very interesting, the description. So somebody who is all-knowing and who knows absolutely everything about you. I've been talking a lot tonight about George Ritchie And he said that at his young age, still fresh on his mind, were many sad things that he had done in his youth, which made him extremely embarrassed when he had this little life's review, which I'm sure will be part of all of our older experiences. So, complete knowledge about us, knowledge complete about everything else, and intense, extreme, unimaginable love are the traits that I've heard. Additions? Comments? Yes.
Yes. If you remember the incident of the Cokeville, of the man and woman that was going to blow up the school children?
Yes.
The children saw a circle of angels around the man and woman. This one girl later was with her mother looking at family pictures, and they came across a picture. It was either the grandmother or the great-grandmother. And the girl said, "That's her, that's her. That was one of the angels." So the being of light is a near relative, as in this case. And that's why the angel knows the individual by name. They know a lot about the individual because they are a near relative.
Thank you.
And as in the case of what this other lady said, a servant of the Lord.
Servant of the Lord. Not everybody may be familiar with the Cokeville, Wyoming incident. Raise your hand if you are not familiar with. Okay. This was a fascinating event that happened in the late 80s, but I don't remember exactly what year. And a guy by the name of David Young and his girlfriend, both of whom, in my personal private opinion, even though I have no credentials to say this, were certifiably crazy. They took over a grade school in this little town. There was only one school. Got all the students into one room. They had a bomb there, and their plan, this was the thinking that they expressed to other people who were there who made it out alive. They were going to kill everybody in the school so they would have these children to teach on the other side and begin a new life with. It was just this twisted thought process. And right before the bomb went off, had been made by this man in the classroom where he had assembled all the children, right before it went off, as our attendee here tonight said, many of the children who were there said that beings in white came through the through the ceiling and told them, the bomb's going to go off, but don't be afraid, this is what you do. Stay low and go towards the window and then climb out after it goes off. So they had specific instructions. As was said, many of the children later found out through looking at family albums that the angels that appeared to them were deceased relatives. The aftermath, and the interesting part of the incident was that the bomb did go off. The only two people who died were David Young and his girlfriend. Everyone else made it out okay. There were some serious injuries. Some of the children had diminished hearing and some serious burns, but the perpetrators were the only ones who died, which I thought had some real justice. It was ultimately made into a book called When Angels Appear to Save the Children. Kind of a neat book. Next thing that happens is a life's review. Interestingly enough, I have never yet spoken with a young child who had a life's review. So apparently this is something that happens to either older people or adults. They all say, at least the people who have had this, two things that fascinate me. One is that every single thing they ever did was there. But I have also heard a few people say that things that they had genuinely repented of, I know that's an extremely religious phrase, but that's the one they use, were gone. It's like you roll the movie and that little section has just been spliced right out. And I can't explain that, but I think it's really cool and it gives me some hope. So I like the sound of that. But the life's review, everything from the instant of birth through the time the person is standing there will often be shown immediately, fully, completely, right before them with the phrase or some kind of comment, what have you done with your life to show me? Or show me your life, or what have you done to bring to me? And so what is this? What's the purpose of, maybe it's self-evident, but what's life's review all about? Thoughts? Ideas? Yes?
I think it's a way to balance everything out from what I've read. It's not so much a judgment. They see their life. They see how they might have hurt someone, or someone might have hurt them, but they see why that person hurt them. They get to see what happened to that person that made them get to that point where they hurt them. So it just kind of, I think it kind of balances everything out for them, the process of life, how we hurt each other, but there's nobody really at fault because everybody has a reason they do. See what happened and why it got to that point for everybody and for you, and why you have to do what you did.
Way of enhanced understanding is what you're saying about everything.
One, they just felt like they were being judged. They just felt like this was for their own good and it was a learning experience for them, and it made them understand that everything was fair.
I've heard people say that they were much harder than on themselves than the being of light was, because all they felt was love, even during the worst of the worst things that they were just going to.
I think that being of light has to be the savior. I don't think anybody can be better when you're having your life with you. That's just my personal opinion.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
I think I haven't had a near-death experience, but I've read quite a little bit. It seems to me that one of the purposes of that life review is to drive home the importance of love and service. What have you done for your fellow man? Whatever. In terms of who that light is, it also depends on where it is when you die and what your beliefs are. Those in China believe that it was a Buddha or the Buddha, depending on their where they're from. It seems to be the religious figure or the figure that they worship in their culture. For Christians, it seems to be Christ, for, as you mentioned earlier. Another thing about the life review that I saw was very intriguing was the fact that not only did they experience those sins and the things that they had done that they're ashamed of in the past, but they also felt the pain and the suffering of those that they have done these things to, how they felt and the pains that they felt, and maybe when it went on to their children or other people, that you felt the effects of your sins and not just your sins, which to me was very enlightening.
Ripple effects of good and evil go out, and how far and how much. Thank you.
I was just wondering, has everyone that you've talked to had the life review?
No. There are a lot of people who have only a few of all of these elements. George Ritchie, for example, who everybody likes to comment about, never had a tunnel. He was just there, and then all of a sudden, Jesus was before him, according to his description. You cannot find one of these elements that is found in every near-death experience. I have even talked to a few people who didn't even have any kind of a serious injury. They had their near-death experience when they were in bed and they had been extremely tired, but that was all that was wrong with them medically or physically. Not all the elements are present.
I find it interesting that everybody seems to go backwards, that a lot of, you know, you have your life review and it's kind of like a slideshow, and how you brought up the children. Those are the only ones that haven't ever described a life review. But at the same time, I imagine that they would have like more of a future review.
You know, I have spoken with only a few children. Most of the children's experiences that I know of are secondhand interviews that I have reviewed and read. But it's interesting to me how different they're described by children. I had some fun chats with Dr. Melvin Morse, who his specialty is in reviewing children. He's a pediatrician, so of course that would work out for him. And there was one child who had a near-death experience, and he was talking to him. He had him draw all these pictures, and this child drew pictures of everything that had happened, and Dr. Morse was saying, "And so did you die? Is that what happened to you?" And then you went to heaven. "Oh no. When people die, that's when they put him in a box and bury him in the ground, and that didn't happen to me." And so this kid had never really associated his experience with death itself, because to him, death was something kind of sinister or scary to him, and that's not what happened to him. For him, it was very positive. I think by necessity, we have to interpret, and there's no other way we can interpret the experiences than through the filter of our own experience. There are only a few people I've ever talked to who really discussed the future. And one was Dr. Ritchie, although he did not put it in his book. And another one was Elaine Durham, and they both described events that they believed would happen in the future unless people shaped up. And so the gist of it was not, this is the way it's going to be without question. The gist of it was, this is your future if people don't shape up. It was kind of a conditional thing, you know, a little bit religious, like Jonah and God says, I'm going to destroy Nineveh, go tell the people, and then everybody, it's not going to happen because they shaped up. Knowledge of the future unless people change their ways. A similar idea was conveyed to Howard Storm when he had his very intense and very negative near-death experience. He was surrounded, as many of you have heard, by evil beings, and ultimately he did his best to pray, although he didn't really know how to pray, not being religious. So he was saying things like, in God we trust, one nation under God, help, you know, whatever he could come up with, you know, because he really had no experience with prayer, but the thoughts behind them were apparently sincere, and he was taken away from that evil place. And the idea was conveyed to him, this is where you're going to go, because these people are like you unless you shape up. And so it was a real wake-up call for him and an expression of what the future could be if he didn't change. In different context, but a similar idea to what Elaine Durham and George Ritchie thought. Any other ideas before we move on to our next slide?
You remember when the Pharisees brought a lady to the Savior for his judgment, and that she had been caught in adultery. And he said, where are thy accusers? And he said, oh, no. And he said, neither do I accuse you. Go thy way and sin no more. What we see the Savior in this non-judgmental, but encouraging the open. We must remember that he will wear a different hat, and we will be judged. And these experiences are to help people to get over these areas, to change their lives.
Thank you for that. There is huge debate, which will never be resolved unless we can interview people who have permanently died, which would be really difficult, about whether or not the temporary nature of these experiences means that they're a little different from what we will ultimately experience. And your thought is that the ultimate experience will be quite different from this one. Other people say, wow, this is what I experienced. I'm looking forward to it again. And they believe that it will be very similar. Next element. Deceased relatives, friends, siblings. We already talked a little bit about that with the Cokeville, Wyoming incident. Although those weren't really near-death experiences, we've also talked about it with the Lady Elizabeth, who helps friends with guardian angels and things. One other experience that I'd like to relate really briefly here is that there was a young lady who heard a very unique idea about deceased relatives and friends. She had had her grandparents pass away when her experience happened. She was just a teenager. But her parents were still living and all her friends were still living. And she had, for a teenager, experienced what she described as a pretty wayward lifestyle. She drank a lot. Polite way to say it is way too involved with boys for someone who was not married. Drugs, a whole bunch of things. And the thing that happened in her experience was that she did not go through the tunnel or see the being of light. Hers was like the quick diversion to, you know, the really unhappy grandma figure kind of a deal. And she found herself in front of a bunch of what she thought were her relatives that were kind of there as a judgment panel. And she was dressed in a white robe, and some people were scowling at her, and some people were snickering at her a little bit. And she looked down, and she said there were all these black stains or spots or what have you on her robe. And she knew immediately that those represented all the bad things that she had done in her short life. And these deceased relatives served a similar purpose that the life's review would have. And that was that she really needed to shape up, and she did when she came back. So the deceased relatives are there usually for some kind of a purpose, to help somebody learn a lesson or to give them a message of peace if they've somehow been worried about a deceased relative. Other thoughts?
There was a fireman here who was fighting a fire, and the whole group of firemen were taken.
Yes.
To like an airport where they come and go. He saw all of his animals. He also saw the sun that he would later come.
That's true. Some people do see children that they will have in the future and other things. Thank you.
All the firemen and all the animals went.
You're talking about the gentleman who was burned up in the forest fire with the others who were with him. Yeah, that was a fascinating experience. I think he gave the experience here for one of the first times publicly. He was a firefighter. He was not a great public speaker. You could tell he had huge emotion, and he, along with several other firefighters, were, was it New Mexico or Colorado? New Mexico. They were fighting a fire, and the wind shifted and started to come up the hill towards them, and they just could not outrun it. They put little metallic tents over them that are supposed to deflect the heat outward, and the fire passed over them, and as it did so, all of them, in essence, died, and they were able to see each other's spirits. And after the fire passed, they obviously went back and revived. The people who came to rescue them actually came to find their remains, were surprised that it was a rescue, because the fire was so hot that the axe handles that they had left outside were burned up, and the axe heads had, some of them had melted. The fire was so hot. Anyways, it was quite a remarkable description. Next slide. Communication and movement, often described as being instantaneous or by thought. George Ritchie described, as many do, the idea of thinking they needed to go somewhere and going there extremely fast or almost instantaneously. Many people also describe the idea of communication as being perfectly clear, with no chance for error, which I always crave but never achieve with my wife. But that's something that on the next life apparently is there. Why would that be an element of the near-death experience? Why not have the kind of communication that we have here? Why would that be something that would be important? Yes?
I think that the need to talk is an embodied need. It's the only way that we can communicate, is whenever there's not the confinement of the body when these experiences happen, then it's just a matter of transmitting pure intelligence and knowledge.
Other thoughts?
Another thing about that is there's no time element involved in that thought period, because you can be here, there, before or after, and when you're having that experience with that thought.
And another comment, yes?
With thought, it's done by images. You see, you feel, it's not done by language. So a person that you may not be able to speak with here or communicate with that may have had a disability or spoke a different language than you, or you didn't know how to communicate, maybe it was too young or too old, that's gone. And so communication is different, and it's not limited in the ways that we have limited here. And one of the reasons I think that we have limited here is that we're still learning, and our thoughts aren't always what we would really act on, and we have freedom of choice and free will. And sometimes we have to think out what we want to do and want to say ahead of time, and not just act on what we're thinking. Where there, you already know what the other person is thinking or what their reactions are going to be, what's right and wrong, and you may still have free will there, but it's a different type of choice.
Thank you.
The other thing is that you're in, you only have, there's a lot of communication that needs to be done in a short period of time, and when you're communicating telepathically, it's faster than word. And not only that, but many ideas, thoughts, etc. can be conveyed to you all at once and you can totally understand them. It's when you get to this plane again that you have to sort through and you have a problem kind of separating them out. But you don't need that on the other side.
It's no, all, I love speed in heaven. I love T3.
It's like USB direct connection, EMAP.
Thank you. I had once that experience, but I was not there, and I was not out of the body myself. I was in the body, and the whole experience shocked me for a whole week because made me aware that who we are is not how we experience ourselves today in the culture that we create as humans. The difference of where we are and our potential, which is natural for us to communicate telepathically, is totally natural. The difference is, what I understood, afraid of being ourselves, we are afraid of being judged, and that is constant, and that makes this barrier that we call communicating ourselves with a language, with concepts, with ideas. We are not fully communicating with each other today, and the reason is the fear. When you are communicating telepathically, you are totally open up, absolutely. Where you are, the other person feels it, and where is the other person, you also know. So the barrier is not there. You are not judging, you are not being judged. So I think is fear the reason why we communicate today with what we call language, and it's not a full communication because you always try to interpret what the other person is trying to say from your perspective. We never get to understand what the other person is at, where the other person is at, never. And the other way, telepathically, you know fully, and the only difference is there is this openness in your heart. And now we don't have that. It's not we don't have that potential, we don't have that, and that's why we are not experiencing that telepathic.
Thank you.
I know that when my grandmother came to me, she had passed away many years. I knew what she was saying mentally, and she said, "We are waiting." And I knew exactly what she meant about "we are waiting." And what she wanted me to do was the genealogy. And I woke up the next day and I remember everything clearly and I thought, oh my gosh, this is not what I wanted to do because I felt like it was so hard. But you know, today, since I've done that, no one else in the family has ever done anything as far as the genealogy goes. So I found my purpose here. Maybe that's why I was sent back. I want to know why I'm still here then, because I want to go back home. To heaven.
I bet a few people want to send me to heaven. Thankfully, that hasn't happened. I'm sure you still have more purpose here. Yes?
I was intrigued by the idea of many thoughts at one time going instantly and whatever, and that you didn't need to, the spirits could use vocal language to talk, but most of them chose the other way because it was quicker and more complete. I began to feel a little bit uncomfortable of not being able to have any of my thoughts to myself if everyone could read them. This last book that I read, however, gave me a little bit of peace in saying, if there are thoughts and things that you don't want to be made public, there is a blog that you can put up there, which made me feel really well.
Very good, yes, there.
I'd like to suggest that ThinkSpeak is the language of the spirit world, the language of the spirit, and that I think I will feel just as comfortable speaking to a friend who lived thousands of years ago, speaking a language that is completely forgotten, even though there was such a thing, but we're all going to be able to communicate with that.
Comment over here.
I was just thinking, here we talk and everyone can hear what we're saying. But those beings on the other side, even if you're in a crowd, they can single out one person and give them a warning and no one else would hear it. So they can converse by thought to one person in a crowd. So but we have to call someone to one side so no one else can hear what we're saying to them.
Very true. One comment in the back and then we'll move on to the next topic. Yes.
It seems that people with the other side of having encounters are more accepting of it telepathically than they would hearing it outside. It seems like it's more natural to us to hear it through our heads than through our ears.
A lot of people think they have thoughts in a certain language, for most of us English, but in fact, many scientific studies show that that's not true. You have the thought, and then you convert it into whatever language is your language. Hence, have the idea of where you want to say something, you can't quite come up with the right word. That would be sort of the demonstrable aspect of that, which is happening to me more and more as time goes on. You can't come up with the right word. Okay. You know, it is now quick approaching 8:30. Let me wrap it up with one thought. And that is about the element that we're just about to, which is the cities of light that were described by George Ritchie, Elaine Jerome, and several others. The interesting part about the description of the cities of light for me is that they show that there are other people who have advanced to the point where they are very similar to God or Jesus or whoever you believe that the being of light is. And Dr. Ritchie was, and also at another point, Howard Storm was brought close to this beautiful city that was filled with people who had attained that level of light and knowledge, if you will. And he thought, wow, this is amazing. I've never before thought that this could be how far we could all go. And so I leave you with this thought, and that is that from many of the experiencers that I have spoken to, our own potential is far greater than we can possibly understand or believe. We have more abilities that wait us, more joy that we have after we get out of this life where we can hardly communicate, where everything breaks, falls apart, erodes, and is so difficult. But ultimately, we have a future that is far beyond our imagination in terms of how wonderful it will be. And I will leave it with that, and thank you for putting up with me tonight.